You have my commitment that I will give you all the clarity that I can give you. And this is what I can tell you. This is the part that I also don't know, and we will need to figure out together.
Hello and welcome to the Data Culture Podcast. I'm Carsten Lange, founder and CEO of BARC, and my guest today is Angelita Frossa Sanchez from Scout24. She's managing a team of data engineers there, and the topic of our talk is really how do I tackle all the changes that are happening so quickly in our environment now with AI and agents that this team is building in terms of how to adapt to new ways of working, to new roles, to new skills and processes, plus obviously also new tooling. But on the other hand, also how to address the human challenges that come with it. Yeah? How to address anxiety and self-inflicted pressure. Yeah, how to keep up with all these changes as a team manager that basically has to lead a team through these times of furious change. We get some really interesting insights on the one hand, what Scout24 has done, for example, in the area of moving from a data catalog to a context catalog for agents, but also on the other hand, how she manages her team and addresses these human challenges with all the changes happening. I think it was really a fascinating discussion. Enjoy it. Hello, Angelita.
Hi, Carsten.
It's great to have you on the Data Culture Podcast. You are an experienced manager of data teams, AI teams, right now at Scout24. And we want to talk a little bit about the challenges and changes of managing teams in the AI era. And maybe we start with the question, so what did you see changing over the last years? Yeah, what were, from your point of view, the biggest changes you have to deal with?
I think that basically in the last years, everything has changed. I think speed of delivery, the way that we work, rituals that we have within the teams, the roles that we have in teams have changed and are being redefined a lot. The tooling that we use to work has changed a lot. And this brings a lot of challenges, not just for the managers, but for all professionals on tech sector, I would say.
Absolutely. And maybe let's go a little bit deeper. You said, obviously, skills and roles. What were the biggest changes there? What is needed today?
I had an interesting discussion with some colleagues on the same field this week when someone asked me, oh, are you leading a data team?
Mm-hmm.
And then I just answered back, can we say that we have one data team in the company? So this is one of the biggest changes.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the democratization of certain roles that we always dreamed of, it's happening, not in the way that we thought in the past,
mm-hmm.
but now AI is enabling a lot of more people to do more data-related tasks. And this is not just about data consumers or business users being enabled right now. I have the former data engineers on my team now building AI agents. And then you would say, oh, then are they AI engineers? Not necessarily, right?
Okay.
They are a little bit of everything. And this is what I have seen, like some roles have a big overlap in the moment. You see data engineers doing AI stuff, AI engineers doing data engineering stuff, business people building the former analytics stuff. So there is this great conversion and overlapping of roles in the moment.
Yeah, and I think we see that everywhere. But that leads to the question, so how would you define your role then in an organization?
This is a great question. And the question that I always have when someone asks me this, do we really need to define the roles? Do we need really to label people in a very strict and contained box,
mm-hmm.
right? I think that in one side, I think this is important because bring clarity. And clarity is gold. In the other hand, I'm like, we might spend a lot of time trying to define a role that will change in a month period.
Yeah. So you're saying you shouldn't spend too much time on it because it's all moving so fast?
Exactly. And one thing that we are doing a lot recently is like, of course, we have our hierarchical organization because it's needed for several different purposes and reasons, right? But we also have projects that we say, okay, which profiles do we need to fulfill this project? Oh, we need someone that knows AI, someone that knows platform. And then we just pick everything that we need. We make a team and deliver the project. So it's like we organize to deliver.
Okay.
And we don't organize for the sake of the hierarchy.
Okay. And you just mentioned agents. Would be interesting to understand what you are building or delivering.
Yeah, so I can highlight some of the deliverables on the last cycles. We have delivered one AI-enabled data and context catalog. Mm-hmm. So where we don't need to ask humans to document their data assets. We can just leverage the knowledge that we already have internally in the company. It can be on documents or Confluence pages, SharePoints, GitHub repositories, and so on. AI would create and make sense of it, ingest automatically on this context and data catalog, and humans will be on the loop for approval or an enrichment that might make sense. And then we have agents on top that allow non-technical users to consume the information from the catalog without knowing that the catalog is behind. You can just ask your agent, oh, do we have any reliable source of data for me to build a feature A? And the agent would figure out. This is something that we have. And we are also working on our own data supporter bot with conversational BI features.
I got to know you after a presentation about this data catalog, and I thought the let's call it the metrics were quite amazing. So you mentioned that you had a let's say more traditional catalog implemented in the organization. But as many of my guests reported, and as we also see in many organizations, that didn't go too well. And then you did this new approach. Maybe could you compare those two a little bit?
Yeah, there is something interesting that we see on the adoption behavior of this new tool is that the highest number of access that we have is not through the tool directly. So if you try to measure the adoption success, looking on how many people have accessed the tool or how many people have included new assets, these numbers are low. But when you look on how many access you had via the MCPs that we made available, mm-hmm. they are like 10, 20 times higher than the number of the access on the tool. And this for me says a lot because it shows that we could cover a gap that we had before, which means that people don't need to know that they need to use the tool A or the tool B or the tool C to fulfill certain purpose. People are willing to provide the information and the context that we need if it's easy for them. So not need to think about which tool should I access to provide A.
I know.
It's like, looks like we have reduced the cognitive overhead for people in this sense. Mm-hmm. And then just say, okay, I just need to use my AI agent that I already know. I use it for everything. I can ask here. Agent will solve it for me. And a great thing is that the agent that we build is not just for consume information, but also to update the information that's already in the tool. So it's a two-way thing.
Okay. How does that look in practice? So I get some data, I recognize that there's an error, and then I can play mm-hmm. back the correction?
I can give you one practical example. Let's suppose you are a person and then you want to build a feature. Let's suppose that you don't know if you have data available to build that feature.
Mm-hmm.
Let's suppose that you use one of your agents or ChatGPT or Claude. Then you log in and you say, I'm a product owner. I would like to build a feature A.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any data that I could use to make this feature live? And the agent would automatically start to think and will ask her, look, I found on your data catalog, and then it would pitch the name of the data catalog. I found on this tool, which is your data catalog, 10 different potential data sources for you. However, I would recommend you to use the first because this is classified as gold data source on your data catalog. However, you need to take care because you don't have all the data quality checks that you should have there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to proceed how? Do you want a sample of the data? Or do you want, if you are the owner of this data set, you could create, I could create data quality checks for you. And then you say, I already know this data. Suggest me 3 different data quality checks that I should have now. Then your Claude or ChatGPT would give you, okay, I would recommend you a freshness data. You need to check every day if the data is fresh. Does it work for you? I would create like this. And then the agent suggests you. You say, yes, it works for me. Do you want me to write back on your catalog too? Yes, do it for me. Then the agent write this data quality check back on the catalog tool, and you don't need to change your screen. Something like this.
Super interesting. And you rebuild your data catalog, or you build a new one with the approach mentioned, so the AI-driven approach?
Yeah, we fully deprecated the old one.
Okay.
And adopted a new one. And we have done this migration, including the procurement process, in 6 weeks.
6 weeks. That's amazing.
Yes.
If you think about, and just for comparison, the old one, how long did that take?
I don't recall because it was a very old implementation.
Mm.
More than 5 years, I would say.
And I think that's an amazing story. But the driver here really is that AI is so more or less self-documenting the sources and what you integrate into the catalog?
This was what drive the speed on the migration, mm-hmm. right? We used AI to do the migration, to generate this first injection of content based on GitHub repositories that we had that had some description of the data, plus Confluence pages that would document the data, and plus other internal sources of knowledge that we had spread everywhere. So we connected everything and asked AI to generate. And then we tagged everything like AI generated, because we want to bring people visibility that what they are consuming, it was not generated by a human, it was generated by AI. But then all the data owners, because we also classified every entity with a data owner, we asked AI to help us to make sense of who could be the team that would be the potential owner of that data. And then the owners would then have the task to revalidate and remove this AI-generated task. So when it was validated by a human, we just remove this tag. And of course, also something that we learned is that not everything needs to have the same level of effort or the same level of documentation. Another thing that we have done, we integrated usage statistics of those objects from our database, for example, how many times certain object is being queried or accessed by someone. And we prioritize the high usage objects. And the others, they just get lower priority and lower priority. These also help us to identify what we need to clean up. And then we don't need to put our efforts on. And then we can reduce storage costs and cloud costs.
All right. Do you know the use cases? So is it really, let's say, search and discovery and people building data products, or is it more analysis related? So they're looking for data to analyze?
I think people looking for data to build their use cases is one. Mm-hmm. But now we are taking a different approach. When we have our internal agents for self-service analytics, we use this as context for agents.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And this is, of course, the second big use case.
Yeah. Let's drill into that, because that's obviously a very current topic, building agents. Agents need context.
Mm-hmm.
So would you say, Or maybe you describe how this works. Yeah. So you have the new catalog that I understand has more additional information from also a lot of unstructured data sources. And that can provide the context. And the data itself is still coming from the databases. And how is all this?
Yeah. So basically the catalog is an abstraction layer on top of the data sources that you have that adds a metadata, right? And then when you have your agents, of course, your agent doesn't have just one single source of knowledge, right? Because you have knowledge is still spread everywhere because the data team and the data catalog is not the only source of truth. Mm-hmm. You might still have information in some repositories or in other separated tools. But we usually show with high confidence what comes from this catalog first. So, and then you have, of course, database, you have catalog on top. Then you have agent connecting first on the catalog, trying to get as much context as it has. Then this answer will return like, with high confidence, I can tell you, you can use this data source because it's documented, it's classified, has quality checks. With lower confidence, I have these other sources that you could try.
And who decides the relevance? Yeah, it's like a prioritization based on relevance. How do you decide that?
This is the agent. We have a certain criteria that would put data sources or answers as more reliable or less reliable. And it's a lot of thing behind. It's not rocket science, but there is a lot of variables like, is this data up to date? Does his has a clear owner? How many quality checks? How many it failed on the last X days? How many access it had on the last X months? Because if it has all of these, but nobody access, it says something, right?
Yeah.
So then we combine all of those variables and create confidence level.
Okay. So you basically build it into the agent.
Exactly.
Okay. And the agents you have built or are building right now, do they have certain areas of, let's say, application or use cases? Do you see patterns in the enterprise where agents are especially useful?
Yeah, to automate that boring task that you don't like to do. I think this is the very first use case, right? Mm-hmm. Also to create this abstraction on top of technical stuff. So one thing that I feel that data people always suffer with is like need to know SQL to extract some information. And this is very frustrating for end users. And you, in one hand, you have data people say, oh, it's SQL, it's very easy. In the other, you should know, mm-hmm. right? It's not very easy, you should know. Mm-hmm. In the other hand, you have business people that have other focuses on their daily lives, and they do their best to write a SQL, but then when they try to run, it doesn't perform. And then this fog is there. So this abstraction is something that I think it's a very good use case. So this was one. The first MCP that we built and is the second most accessed MCP on the company, which allow people to ask the agents about data, build the SQL, and see the results.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Why do you call it an MCP? Because MCP is more the connection, I would say. Or...
Yeah. MCP is like this. Of course, there is the framework, the architectural design, but there's this connecting your models, Claude or ChatGPT, with one of your internal tools without asking the user to write the SQL. So it's okay. Allowing your agents to make sense of the data that you have.
Excellent. You mentioned this, let's say, jump in usage with the MCP connection. So basically using an typical chatbot LLM interface. Could you say, or is it like the new interface to all applications internally? Is it something that's now very widespread using MCP, or is that still very focused on certain applications?
I think that it's a tendency, right? But if you sit on top of old legacy tools, this is something that you might not benefit that much. And this generates frustration, right? One approach that we have internally on my team is like, if the tool, because nowadays you have tools and they provide MCPs and you just connect on their agents. And this is great, right? But if the tool doesn't have an MCP, we build it internally. This is how we started with this first MCP that allow people to do query. The tool that we have, the SQL engine, didn't have an MCP in March 2025. And then we said, you don't have, we build it. So we wrap the APIs and then we connect on the agents and then we enable people, right? Mm-hmm. But some old tools, they even don't allow you to extract or inject things using APIs, right? And some companies still have this. Of course, we still have. It's not the the majority of them. And I think this is key nowadays when you evaluate a new tool to understand, do I have the capability already there? Yes, it's a very plus. If I don't have, do I have the ability to build it myself? Because the tool will still provide very good APIs that I can connect with. Yes. If don't, I think it's difficult to survive nowadays as a tool.
Absolutely. Okay. Let's circle back to the beginning of the conversation. I think we got now a pretty good idea about the pace of change in your organization and that you're adopting many new things in a short time frame. What would you say are now the biggest challenges in managing your team? You mentioned the changes, the skills, the roles, the tooling, but maybe in a more abstract way.
Yeah, I think that guiding the teams through changes was always a big challenge because it touched very human aspects of our work life, right? In the end, we are still humans in the end. Mm-hmm. And I have seen a lot of changes in my life, my professional life. I have seen the internet, I have seen the cloud, and now I'm seeing AI. And I think this is the most disruptive one that I have experienced, and it generates a lot of anxiety. Mm-hmm. It generates more pressure, and it's not just the pressure. When you say pressure in the corporate environment, people usually think that pressure that comes from the management or from the company. It's not this kind of pressure. It's we feeling pressured by ourselves that we need to stay competitive on the tech market. And then we see layoffs happening here and there. So guiding people through this change, keep them with the focus that you need to overcome. Everything will be fine. We need to find our way. Things will change. And let them know, like, look, things will change again tomorrow. I think this is the biggest challenge that we have seen because as humans, we love clarity. And we love to live every day like yesterday. So,
okay. And how do you address this? So it's the big challenge, but what can you do?
I think that we always can give people as much clarity as we can and be transparent. This is something that I always do with my teams. For example, I have a lot of meetings, but I join every daily meeting that I have with the team because I want to feel what they are feeling. And when I notice some anxiety or uncertainty, I'm like, look, you have my commitment that I will give you all the clarity that I can give you. And this is what I can tell you. This is the part that I also don't know and we will need to figure out together. Uh-huh. And we can find a way to overcome this. And might happen that this way doesn't work. And that is okay. We will figure out another one. So I think this is important to bring this security for the team.
All right. Yeah, I completely agree. That makes a lot of sense. Did you also take certain initiatives around all these changes to support people in being able to cope with them?
Yeah, I think this is a very big topic at our company in the moment. So we have created a lot of different forums that bring more clarity to the people. We have TCM's technical community meetups that we do every week, where everybody show what are they doing, how are they doing, why are they doing, what has failed, what was a success. We also have launched an AI upskilling program for all employees, both in English and German, so people can have in three different levels content about AI for beginners, for intermediates, and for professionals. And this is a training that is available with no cost for any employee. All of employees have access to or ChatGPT, or Claude, and other AI tools that they might find relevant for their work. And every day there is something new.
Which is the challenge. So if you would maybe want to recommend the most maybe impactful initiatives in tackling a change in yeah, basically guiding also teams through these, let's say, furious times of change, what would that be, your top recommendations?
I would say that giving as much clarity as you can, it's the gift that you can do, you can give to your team. So I talk sometimes with other colleagues and I go to certain events where people say, oh, we need to convince management to do A, we need to convince management to do B. Being honest, this is a problem that we don't have. We have a very strong alignment with the management. Management knows what they want, what is possible to do. And this alignment just happened because of the clarity and openness that we have with each other. So I think that clarity is key.
All right. That's clear. That makes no sense. Maybe to end this really fascinating conversation with a little bit look ahead. So what's on your table? Where are things heading right now for you? So what are your plans for the next, I think years is too much, but month? What's going on?
Yeah, in AI era, we don't talk about years anymore, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
In my plate, a very hot topic for me is a philosophical one. How do we adapt ways of working in this AI era? Because we came from this agile practices, software engineering practices, and they were built and tailored to solve certain problems like more human collaboration, knowledge sharing about what needs to be done. And with AI, we have now the phenomenon that people tend to work now more siloed, and cognitive silos might happen. So we are questioning ourselves, does the rituals that we have, daily stand-ups, backlog reviews, sprint reviews, we don't think that they make sense anymore. So we have seen a natural change through the last months. And we have been discussing as a team, this is not a big company discussion, but as a team, how do we want to tailor our rituals to the new ways of working, where one engineer sometimes have a project sitting with Copilot and they do this like alone in a week? What are the consequences of this? Which kind of impact can we have? And how do we work to mitigate the risk as fast as we can? So this is a big topic for us. What it means for our careers, this is also a big discussion that we have. And there is, I personally have a concern that nowadays senior engineers spend a lot of time speccing and reviewing PRs rather than programming, per se. And for some people, this generates frustration and they don't know what their career will look like on the upcoming months or years. And this is a discussion that I'm having with colleagues from the field, trying to understand where they are leading to and try to contribute also to bring more clarity as we can. And of course, the technical challenges, right? So delivering the assistance, reducing the operational overheads that we might have in areas where we can bring technology to bring the speed, also the clarity, the quality. Yeah, I think that those are my main topics.
Yeah, and all fascinating, and each one would basically mean a new podcast.
For sure.
But since we have still like 1 or 2 minutes left, I'm really interested in the second one, the career path. First question is, do you already see in your organization that basically you have less demand for junior roles because of AI?
This is something that I can't answer directly. So I never had a juniors on my team on this company. We always hired from professionals up on my team specifically. But I have been discussing this with colleagues where they say they don't hire juniors because it's more time consuming to build up the juniors than coping with AI.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a thing, right? I don't remember where, a research that says that 22% less of open positions for entry levels.
Yeah.
And I think this is something that we need to think carefully because the market might be tough for the entry levels. And I think that we all have a responsibility to create jobs for everyone, not just for experienced people.
Yeah, and also I think out of self-interest, because where can the seniors come from if you don't educate from the junior level up?
Yeah. And we are getting old. Right? We need new people to take our place.
Also true. And for the I think that's one super interesting discussion. How AI is changing on the senior level. You already mentioned the change in what people actually do. Yeah, from this, let's say, from doing to more supervising. Do you see other changes on the senior roles?
I see a tendency on the middle management roles that middle managers might have more direct reports. I see this happening in several different companies. I think that what is considered performance nowadays might also change.
Mm-hmm.
Right? How do we measure performance nowadays with AI, right?
You mean people performance?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I think this is something that we change. And also, I think that for the middle level, there is also a challenge because now everybody expects them to perform as seniors.
Mm-hmm. With the help of AI.
Exactly. And not always they are ready to have the critical judgment on the AI outcomes.
All right. Angelita, absolutely fascinating discussion. We could go on, but our time is a little bit up. So final question. Yeah? If a team manager, a data responsible person should change or do one thing tomorrow, what would that be?
If you're not using AI, you are already very late. So you should. This would be my recommendation. And educate yourself about what it means for your team.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it will get more difficult to manage them.
Absolutely. Excellent. Angelita, thanks so much. All the best to you and see you soon. Bye-bye.
See you soon. Bye-bye.